Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 4 of What's It Like? My guest is Brian Brushwood, who is a professional magician. Not only a professional magician, but a touring one, too.
Yeah, all over the United States and I guess internationally now. We got back from Indonesia a couple months ago.
How many weeks of the year are you on tour?
It's actually gotten a little bit better now that I'm doing more broadcasting because I'm able to do that from the studio. But I would say at its height, 200 days, 250 days out of the year. And now we're a little bit lower. I think we're down to around 150 days out of the year.
It seems to me being a magician as a profession is a tough gig.
It depends on what's tough to you. It's tough in that you have to run everything as a one-man operation. You have to be able to speak intelligently on stage. You got to be funny. You got to, be reasonably in shape, and you got to be able to manage all these different routines and figure out how you're running everything. It's also logistically, you're your own salesperson. You're your own ad person. You're your own layout and design person. And if you're good enough to be able to handle all those things at once, then you can make a pretty good living as a magician.
There are all kinds of types of magicians, the large apparatus stuff to the things that I like best, which are the close-up stuff, which is all skill-based.
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the things when I first got into magic. I originally eschewed all the big stage performers and learned a lot of knuckle busting, sleight of hand, cards and coin manipulations, that kind of thing. And I was doing a party where I was doing a bunch of the hardest card tricks I knew how to do, and they were getting good responses. And then just on a lark, I threw in as a finale the old sideshow stunt, the human blockhead, where you take a 4.5-inch nail and hammer it into your nose. And there was something about the visceral nature of that effect that just shook everybody and got the biggest response of the entire night. And I was just like, well, shoot, if that's what it takes to get people's attention, let me learn some more weird stuff. So next thing, it was fire eating, and it was a straitjacket escape. And then slowly my show became this monstrosity to where I couldn't even call it a magic show. I started calling it bizarre magic because I didn't want people to think that it would be a good idea to take their 4-year-old to it.
That's true. It is a bit more adult, certainly college centered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like when my friend CJ Johnson showed me the type of performers that were making it in the college market and the type of responses that the college students were giving him, I was just, I was born for this place.
I think of you as the Conan O'Brien of magic.
I'll take that. Conan's hilarious. I'd love to have a shred of Conan's comedy talent.
You do a variety of podcasts too.
Yeah, that all started with as the new media space started emerging, I didn't want to wait for someone to call with an offer for me. I wanted to have the experience right away. So for the first year and a half that YouTube really took off, I started making these little 5-minute vignettes of life on the road called Brian Brushwood on the Road. And they never really got hugely popular. I think most of them have still only around 10,000 views tops. But it was so good for me to learn how to tell a story, to learn how to edit things together, to learn how to speak in terms of knowing what's going to work for the edit later. And the best part was when we went to pitch Scam School, I had stuff I could point to of me already hosting a show. And they were able to see, oh, this guy knows how to talk on a camera. He looks good. He does some good tricks. So and Scam School was my first breakout podcast with Revision 3. And from that, we've born 3 other ones that I'm involved in, including NSFW, a comedy show we do every Tuesday night, the Weird Things podcast, and the newest one, Frame Rate, where we talk about movies and video TV.
Now, Scam School is, I think, one of the best podcasts I've ever seen.
Ah, that's very kind of you to say. I'm happy to hear that.
It's clearly laid out. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It is here. This is a really fancy thing, and you'll never figure this out. Oh, by the way, after the commercial, I'll explain to you how to do it, and I'll get somebody to actually show you how to do it.
Yes, and I'm so glad to hear you say that. We wanted the episodes to be quick. We wanted engaging personalities, which is why we actually go to the bar. It's not me in a studio teaching stuff. And we wanted it to fool you and then give you the aha moment of learning how it's done. And the thing that makes me happiest about Scam School is that people really go out and try these scams on their friends. It's not the kind of thing where they just learn it in an academic way. My goal is to have somebody hours after watching the video without any practice after having a few beers, decide to try one of them on their friends and have a reasonable chance of still pulling it off. And the stories of success, I mean, they thrill me when people actually, you know, tell me that they become popular at their high school, or they, you know, they were the hit of the evening, you know, amazing all their friends. It's very, very rewarding.
It's a bit of Penn and Teller.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Penn and Teller have been huge influences on me for, I mean, since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can honestly say that if there was no Penn and Teller, there would be no Brian Brushwood. At least not magic. I assume I still would have been born.
So from Scam School, what was the next thing that you created?
Well, when Scam School launched, it was really great because it was generally well received and it grew organically, and those were all good. And I got a lot of people. It was clear that they wanted more engagement. They were like, I kind of like this Brian Brushwood guy, but, you know, I only see him 10 minutes once a week. So that was, and meanwhile, Lil Laporte was, of course, hosting This Week in Tech, and we were watching the live stream start online. And I thought, you know, I'd love to handle that stuff, but I, you know, I'm no good at it. I have no experience. I have no equipment. I have nothing. So I needed a place to be bad before I could be good. So I just turned on a video camera, went live on Stick'Em at the time, and just only told the people who were following me on Twitter, which I think at the time might have been as little as like 500 or 600 people. And, you know, was thrilled when 40 people tuned in and we talked magic for like 3 hours. And I didn't know when to begin or when to end or how to keep everything flowing. And eventually, you know, you learn the tools with VidBlaster and this other stuff. So we called it the BB Live Show, and it was never officially, I guess it was kind of officially a podcast, but it was always a side project, just an excuse to kind of clown around. But after about 6 months of doing that, in the middle of the summer, we had kind of a regular thing where every Tuesday night we would have a particular cast of characters would call in, and we started getting, you know, consistently 500-600 people tuning in live. Mm-hmm. This thing. And then that's when you know, Leo Laporte was hitting me up for ideas for other shows for the network. And I was like, well, if you want to do a comedy show about, you know, internet culture, about, you know, the kind of thing that that gamers who are playing World of Warcraft would listen to while they're out doing raids, then, you know, I'd love to do this. And he thought it was a great idea, and NSFW was born.
So BB, Brian Brushwood, live.
Yes, correct.
What in the world is NSFW?
NSFW, and
I got North, South, Florida, West.
Yeah, NSFW means not safe for work, and it's what you always put on if you're going to forward a hilarious video clip to your friend who works in a cubicle at some major computer company, and it has a flash of booby in there or something. You make sure to put it NSFW so he doesn't get caught looking at something not safe for work while he's there. Ironically, the show is safe for work. We try to capture that kind of sensibility, though. Scam School is, of course, suitable for all ages. Mm-hmm. And early on, I had to wrestle with Revision 3 on bleeping out curse words, because they're all like, what? It's intended for people at the bar. Just leave the curse words in. And I'm like, I know that the bar is where it takes place, but we're also doing magic in some of these episodes.
Yes.
And I guarantee you people watch it with their 12-year-old and it's awkward when an F-bomb gets dropped. Mm-hmm. So same thing, you know, whereas, you know, NSFW, we're a little bit saucier and faster on that.
Is there a conflict between spiky-haired Brian, the fun-loving drinker, and the family, I've got a kid in Girl Scouts guy?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's great, because when I'm on the road, I'm a bachelor. It's like, you know, I do all the things I did when I'm a bachelor. Or I put it this way. When I'm on the road, it's exactly like it was when I was a bachelor, only I'm not allowed to get laid. But I never got laid when I was a bachelor, so it's exactly like being a bachelor. And then I get to come home, and then it's like I'm super dad. You know, I don't ever have to run into a conflict with Bonnie about, like, I want to go out to some party or go out with the boys on a Thursday night or whatever, because I get all of that out of my system while I'm on the road. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you know, coming back home, it's all I want to do is hang around to be super dad.
Yeah, quite a different experience.
Yeah, it is.
When you were growing up, what was your family like?
They were very encouraging, and I did not know that it was a rare thing to have your mom say, you can do anything you want in the entire world as long as you're happy. Like, I grew up hearing that so often that it never occurred to me that I couldn't. And it was weird to encounter other people who you know, even performers who are like, you know, like, why don't you quit your job? Just do performing. And they're like, oh, my parents would kill me. Sent me. They think I should do that. And I was like, wow, that's really bizarre.
What was your major challenge in school?
I don't know, to be honest. When it comes to school, college was a funny time for me in that I worked so hard in high school to get the good grades and to become as smart as I could, and then got into the honors program at University of Texas. And once I got to UT, discovered that there was so much more to life than the school, than the learning. You know, it's the outside stuff. So I sort of had a delayed teenage years when I went to college, and I did great, got good grades, and I in fact, to graduate under the program I was in, you had to make a thesis, and I managed to talk my way into doing a magic show as a creative writing thesis. So while I was at college, I was working professional gigs, developing this this show, and it was a fantastic experience. It's when I think of the challenges, though, I'm not really sure I could think of anyone's I don't know. Let me get back to that one. I guess I have so many fond memories of my college years. It's hard for me to go back and try to dig up the frustrating ones, because I'm sure they're there.
If you hadn't become a magician, what would you have become?
Computers. Would have been 3D modeling and animation. My dream was, I really wanted to work in the video game field. And I actually had a 3D demo reel that I put together, and I was trying to be a 3D modeler, and spent a year testing video games for a living for Rockwell Semiconductors. I spent 2 years at Dell doing their high-end sales support, designing systems for high-end clients or ISPs, and or designing networks, that kind of thing. And I loved it. As far as working for the man jobs go, they were awesome. But it was this itch that I always wanted to know what could have been. You know, I don't want to be one of those guys that never tried quitting his day job. And so I took 1 year off. I said, I'm going to try this crazy magic thing and then get it out of my system. My goal was never for it to be a success. I just wanted to spend 1 year and just have it out of my system, so I knew I at least tried, and then go back to real work. And instead, you know, of course, 2 years, you know, 2 years into it, I've been on the Tonight Show, and I'm touring all over the United States.
What's the best thing about your job?
The freedom to essentially, I've worked so much harder at this than I have at any other job in my entire life, as far as number of hours goes. And it's never felt like work. I mean, even this right now, you know, it's like just sitting around talking, doing an interview. This is all part of the job and the outreach and letting people know about Scam School and the live magic show. But it's everything's fun, man. It's like when you're piloting your own starship and you're captain of your own destiny, it makes it really easy to put forth a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm. What has surprised you?
I think the biggest surprise is that I've been able to make a good living doing a very unconventional show and having a lot of fun. It's one of those, like, waking up every morning, like, you know, wow, they haven't figured out I'm a fraud yet. You know, as I hope to continue to be surprised that way for many years to come.
Is it hard to come up with new tricks or parts for your act?
Oh yeah. No, there's nothing harder than thinking and trying to be creative and come up with new projects. And it used to be, when I was only doing the stage show, I would, I'm doing a 150 shows a year, let's say, and I would write maybe two or three new routines every year, and I'd try them out, and some of them stick around. Others of them, you know, like, I haven't quite figured that one out, and I had to drop it. And then when we started doing Scam School, where I'm beholden to come up with a new trick every single week, my creative energies have been really tapped. So now I'm down. I'm happy if I'm able to write one new stage routine per year, with how much of my time is also being pulled into Scam School and now, you know, the three other podcasts as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's see, Scam School, comedy, and Frame Rate.
Oh, yeah. Scam School, NSFW, Frame Rate. Although my favorite out of all of them is a project I'm doing with Justin Robert Young and Andrew Main called Weird Things, where it's we're three guys who talk about, the supernatural. And the way I describe it is, we're three guys who don't necessarily believe in Sasquatch, but we think he's awesome. And, you know, we don't necessarily believe in ghosts, but we'd love to stay in the world's most haunted house and bust out a Ouija board and stuff. If you dig, you know, Art Bell stuff with less credulity, I think you'll really dig the Weird Things podcast.
So it's more about the unusual?
Oh, yeah. Way unusual. Andrew Main gets these incredible news items from all over the world. One of the things we talked about on a recent podcast was there's an item on the Weird Things page about the audio recording of a cosmonaut going down in flames as his equipment fails, and he's crying with rage, cursing the people who built the defective stuff. Like, he knew getting into this thing that he was not going to make it home alive, and it's just a harrowing tale. Can you imagine being in that position?
Well, that would be unusual and scary.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, and in fact, what he said was, he knew that this thing was going to go down, but the reason he got in it was because if he didn't, then they would go with the alternate pilot, which would be his best friend, Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space. And so he didn't want to do that to his friend Yuri, because he knew for sure it was going to go down, and or he believed for sure. Mm-hmm. And fascinating stuff.
Hmm. Well, more with Brian right after this, right after I remind you of the good work done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. I know what you're thinking. Why are children doing research? It is, after all, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. But no, it's actually a lot of grown-ups doing research on diseases children have. And you can help. Go to their website. It's sdjude.org. Click on the donate button. It costs over $1 million a day to operate St. Jude's. Don't worry, I'm not asking you to give the whole amount. I'm just asking you to chip in. So go to stjude.org. I also added St. Jude's to my Facebook page. After all, how could you not like St. Jude's? So, Brian, everybody needs to give themselves self-motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm a tremendous believer in the power of written goals. What's the old saying? A goal that's not written down is just a wish, and wishes don't come true. There's something about actually writing down, this will happen, that causes your brain to believe. It's like, well, I mean, if this is going to happen, I need to be taking steps towards it. And I post my goals up in the shower. I have them in the office. And all these little moments when you try to think of, what are the little steps I could take? What is something I could do right now that'll get me closer to a network series? What is something I could do today that'll get me closer to launching a new podcast? And, you know, whether it's a phone call, whether it's an interview like this, you want to take small moves that fill in the overall picture.
Hmm. Always headed towards something bigger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I'll tell you, the most depressed I ever got was right around the time I turned 30 years old. I'd had 5 successful years touring at college campuses. We were making good money. We were saving a lot of it, getting ready to buy this house here. And I was like, wow, I have reached all the goals that I laid out 5 years ago when I quit my day job. And I guess now my job is to make sure that nobody takes it away from me. And once I was in that mindset, like, and my brother had a job that he eventually left because it was a great job. He was only working 5-6 hours a day, making great money. And the work was crazy easy, but he would basically just go in and hope he didn't get fired each day. And you can't live that way. That's too demoralizing. It's too demotivating. And I think that we're animals that are built to achieve and kick ass and kill things. And so it's what you got to do is have, as absurd as it sounded to me back at the time, I was like, well, I guess I need to dream bigger. And so I wrote, you know, just outrageous, crazy things. Like, I want a show that's so popular that I get recognized on the street. And danged if here I am, you know, another 5 years later. That's not exactly where we are with Scam School. I mean, I get recognized by the TSA with my hair down under a hat wearing glasses. It's amazing.
Let me flip the question. If you have to calm yourself down, how do you soothe yourself?
That's a good one. I think a lot of it is the creature comforts. There are little things that you could do. Traveling is very stressful. And, you know, especially when you're getting up at 4 a.m. and you got to hit the airport and that kind of thing. There are, there's a couple of video games that I'll play on my iPhone. I've really been enjoying playing the Twitter game, trying to come up with pithy statements to put out and see how many people retweet them or end up following me. It's the little things. I think being connected to the internet takes me out of the fact that I'm in this country or in this side of the state or wherever. And instead, it makes me feel like I'm back where I've always been.
Hmm. Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Oh, my gosh. Challenged me to the core. I mean, when you, I guess when I, challenging is an interesting word. Certainly adjusting to family life. I mean, having a kid is a big change and an awful lot, but it's not all at once, you know? It's one of those things that you look up one day and you're like, wow, I've made a lot of changes in my life to accommodate this little person. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, yeah, having kids is got to be one of the most significant things.
Mm-hmm. And people either go in the inspirational part of having kids or to something bad that's happened in their life.
Yeah. And I guess I've just gotten lucky and, you know, I've got to knock on wood here, but I mean, even the bad things that happen don't seem bad. Like there's, you know, I think about, I had an experience, I don't know, 6 years ago, I did morning talk show radio, did an appearance to promote a show here in Austin. So I went on the number one talk show in all of Austin and I did a mind reading trick that took about like 3 minutes of setup and ended in abject failure, complete and utter failure. And it's like I left around, I was like, well, I didn't go so hot. And then I'm thinking about like how many thousands of people just heard that. And, you know, how many times did I mention my name and I just totally failed. And then I went home and it was like, ah, well, what can you do? And I kept waiting for someone to say something about it and nobody did. And I years later, I actually got scheduled to go back on the show because, you know, over time, I'm sure like, no, nobody remembers what a failure I was. And then I went back in. This was when we were launching Scam School to promote it. I went back in and sat down and I waited for them to recognize that I'm the guy that went in there 5 years ago and totally screwed up my trick for them. And they not only did they not remember the event, they didn't remember ever even meeting me. So it's like I knew all the listeners didn't care because they would have forgotten long ago. And I knew, but I assumed that the only people who cared was me and the host of the show. And then I found out that the host of the show didn't care. And then I went home and I was like, Bonnie, you're not going to believe it. Those guys... I said, those guys that I did that trick that totally screwed up on 5 years ago, they don't even remember that. And she's like, the hell are you talking about? When did you go on a show and screw up a trick? And I realized that I was the only person in the entire world that remembered this failure. And it's like, and now I'm trying to forget it. It's like, what's the point, man? It's like, go ahead and fail, man. There's nothing wrong with failing. What's the worst that can happen? That was, you know, today, right now, Google on their front page has the image of Houdini. It's Houdini's birthday. And Houdini had a principle he called no permanent damage, where he would do just about anything as long as it didn't run the risk of killing him and ruining the rest of his career. So it's like, you know, if you're doing a magic trick and the gimmick, you know, pops open and everyone sees how the trick works, so what? Mm-hmm. I mean, not going to die.
Right.
No permanent damage.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would be your best advice? What would you say?
Oh, yeah. Okay, here's the thing. Yeah, there are a million good reasons why you should wait to start moving towards your dream, and you should listen to none of them. Don't wait. Call people that you have no business calling. Ask advice from them. Go ahead and get out there and start performing. I remember when my first summer, I knew maybe like 5 card tricks, but I knew that magicians could make like $20 an hour by doing card tricks table to table at a restaurant. That sounded amazing to me. So I didn't ask permission, I didn't wait, I didn't mentor anyone. I knew 5 tricks, so I just put on the nicest suit I had, went out with my friend Gordon, and we went to 20 restaurants and asked them, hey, you want a magician to go around and do card tricks? It'll entertain people while they're waiting for their food, and you know, we can make some tips. And sure enough, we got 3 restaurants to sign up for it. And you fake it until you make it. You act like the successful person you want to be, and pretty soon you turn into the successful person you act like, and you can't sit around and wait for anything to come to you. You've got to go out to it.
My last question is to help me get better at this process. Think of an event in your life we didn't talk about. You know, some really good story, either good or bad. What should I have asked you to get you to tell that story?
Oh, man. These are tough questions.
Thank you.
This is a grueling interview.
Thank you.
This is gotcha journalism. I don't know. I guess I would say I got nothing for you, man. I've tried to think of because we all have material. We all have things, you know, stories that we all hope we get to tell. But I'm suffering from
a happy life.
I mean, there's just so many things. I was like, I don't know what story.
Well, you're no fun. I mean, you got no regrets, no roads not taken. Well, you're not giving me nothing here.
Well, I'm telling you, don't get me wrong. I've got epic stories of failure. I mean, you know, I did a show at West Virginia where they just full on did not like my show. And at the end of the show, full on threw fruit at the stage. I didn't know anyone actually did that. But I get off stage and I was like, the hell is that? And I'm like, they threw fruit at my stage. That really happened.
I've never heard of it actually happening.
I for one can guarantee you that it did. But I learned a lot about connecting with a certain type of audience at that gig, and I made some changes. And look, man, the faster you fail, what's the old saying? To double your success rate, you need to double your failure rate. It's like just double everything and get started.
Well, you've been very successful at getting lots of people to come to your events. Do you have any tricks or ways in which you generate excitement?
Oh, yeah. Well, and what's funny is I don't even consider myself particularly smart about figuring out. I mean, I'm clever from time to time, but I did a show in Maryland where 9 people showed up, and it was miserable. I was like, how do you do a show for 9 people? And I looked at the marketing. It was 1 Xerox of a clip art of a rabbit in a hat, and I said, Magic Show Thursday. Well, maybe this had something to do with the fact that there are 9 people here. So what I started doing for the next 2 years was every time we go to a campus, I would write down, I would ask them, what's the most clever promotion you guys have ever done? What's the most successful promotion you've ever done? What's the biggest event you had? What did you do to promote it? And we started keeping a list. And after about a year and a half, we had over 100 of the most brilliant ideas that college campuses had used all over the United States to generate buzz and get lots of people to show up on campus. We put it in a book called Pack the House that's available on Amazon.
Oh, I'll have to add that to my to-read list. And thank you for joining me today. I appreciate the help.
You got it, man.
Thanks, Brian.